This is a HeadGum Original.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Sunshade, Kiki with the gaze. It's time to drag her. Time to drag her. Drag her.
Okay, y'all, here comes the bonus ep. I know you were so excited for it. If you just want to kiki with these girls, Jackie Cox and Rachel Bloom, sit tight and get excited for this one and only deep dive into the tea of season 12. Brought to you by what? Drag Her, the one and only RuPaul's Drag Race Recap Podcast. Keep listening.
It's so good to see you, Jackie.
Hi, Rachel.
I'm so glad to have you, Jackie.
Thank you for the New Year's greeting that you sent me. It was so nice.
Me? What did I send
you?
I did a couple things. One, I tagged you because I carried my I'm a good, such a good, real good person.
Well, that was amazing.
Card. We do that. And then maybe I did say Happy New Year, but I don't. Or what I did was just tell you that Instagram is crazy because that's what we just talked about.
I think you might have said Happy New Year too. It was very kind. Either way,
here's the tea.
Kind.
I was drunk, so
great.
Maybe.
Perfect. Even better.
Maybe like who memories of New Year's? Like the next day I look at my text and I'm like, who did I text? Like just had a lot of feelings. You know, I was feeling.
So you actually had like kind of a New Year's.
So that was the only gig I really did in December, but I did a New Year's gig with Jan.
Oh, cool.
Who you didn't get to meet Jan on Drag Race, but of course, Jan is incredible and from my season. And we hosted New Year's together in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, fun.
Wow.
Yeah. Which you wouldn't realize is actually a really fun, very gay place.
I didn't know this at all.
Oh, yeah. Very gay, very fun. Everyone is so nice. Everyone is just so nice. It's so lovely to be somewhere where everyone is so nice.
I love those pockets of like progressive cities in the Midwest.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's so surprising. I did a comedy festival years ago in Bloomington, Indiana, and half of my sets were in a gay bar. And I was like, oh, Indiana's really progressive. And everyone around me laughed. They were like, no. It's just Bloomington, my
friend.
You're
just on the island. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I have no idea actually what the rest of Columbus is like. There's literally this one gay bar that's next to this one gay restaurant that's next to this one kind of gay hotel. And I was literally on those two blocks for like the two nights I was there. So beyond that, don't know. But from what I've seen of Columbus, very gay, very lovely.
Perfect. I need to just imagine that just around the corner there was, you know, someone being conversion camped. But you were like, this is a utopia.
But Rachel, you know this from touring. Like, it's amazing meeting people from all over the country and realizing, like, how similar people are or how there's great people everywhere. I'm sure there's horrible people everywhere, too, but there's great people in every state, which is very cool to learn.
You find the kind of smart... The smart people exist in every pocket, and it's just the difference of how many other smart people are they surrounded by, or have they found other people like that online?
Yeah.
That makes a big difference now, right? Because now people can find like-minded people. People can honestly find anything on the internet, good or bad. I guess they can find like-minded people.
I'm surprised there's cute people everywhere. Like, honestly. Like, every time I go to any city, I'm like... There's attractive people. Like, I don't know why
that is actually a direct byproduct of the internet because these kids today have access to literally every tutorial.
Right.
It's like these teenagers have significantly better hair than I think I have ever had. I'm like, who? I just looked horrible.
Because as a teenager, you're supposed to have the ugly, floofy hair. You're supposed to have like the ugly teenage boy hair where you're like, you're stupid and you think that looks good.
Yeah, they all know. They all even like the straight guys, now there's like hair tutorials on TikTok for straight guys.
Fuck my life. Okay, should I start this?
Speaking of straight guys, this is your podcast. You do.
I mean, I want this in. Maybe we'll put it in. I don't know. But hey,
I am so excited to be here and be reunited with Rachel after our season 12 choices debate.
You guys were in a really key episode of Drag Race.
What a day that was.
Talk about it. Talk about it. Speak on it.
So I'll give you this from my POV to start, because I think there's been a lot of discussion on the internet about this episode, about like what was even happening. And I think the answer is no one knows, including everyone who was there that day. So what we, the queens, were told prior to the quote unquote debate was we'd be asked like a very specific set of questions, and we had to like maintain a platform and character throughout and sell our platform of why we should be the next drag president. This is what we were told was going to happen. Literally cut for time. There's scenes of us like we had all the questions in advance. So we were practicing them and like coming up with different kinds of answers and different kinds of things. And Rachel, what happened next?
Well, Jackie, thank you for cutting to me. That's really interesting to know that you had the questions in advance. I was always wondering if you did. Well, what happened next was that, so I came into the show. So from my point of view, I had been psyched to do this for months. That day I was 2.5 months pregnant. I was in the thick of my, I can't tell people I'm pregnant, but I feel like shit. Like I'm constantly nauseous.
I would have had no idea. You seemed like a ray of sunshine, and B, you actually had to keep it together because of what happened.
It was the adrenaline really kept me going through. How do we say this? Like, I'm going to say it as factually as I can to just be factual. There's a man named Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
And I was told he was a Drag Race like super fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he'd ever seen Drag Race. What proceeded to happen was Jeff Goldblum basically turned the day into his own one-man monologue and just wanted to pontificate about anything that came into his mind.
Interesting.
And so as a result, which is like, you know, that's his shtick. Like, I don't think this is like that. This is his Jeff Goldblum. He's just going to come and be Jeff, but it's rough. When you're pregnant and nauseous and you rap 2 hours later than they said. And then I'm sure it was also hard to be, you're doing your job. You're up there like with your set of questions. Basically every question, Jeff kind of just went on a tangent.
Yeah. And what was hard for us too, in addition to just kind of rambling on about things that A, we hadn't prepared for, or B, didn't really have anything to do with either drag or politics, was he would start asking us to sing different songs that he just wanted to hear us sing.
Why?
And this was obviously cut because we would try to sing them, but like we knew that VH1 wasn't going to pay for the rights to, like, I think he wanted us to sing, I think he was asking us to sing Ethel Merman or something at some point.
He was basically looking at every queen and he was doing the thing. Again, I don't think this is going to be a surprise to anyone because Jeff Goldblum, I think, has a whole show right now where he's just like Jeff Goldblum-y.
Yes. The universe according to him? Is that what it's called or something?
I think so. And so he would look at each queen and be like, you know who you remind me of? You remind me of, you remind me of Ronnie Spector.
Yeah, very that.
Can you sing Ronnie Spector? And then I'd be like, Jeff, they're never going to air this. And he's like, why? And I'm like, because in order to play a snippet of music, you have to get music rights. Like, I know this from coming off from creating a TV show. I was like, even to hear a snippet of music, you have to pay music rights. And there's no way they're going to pay for that. Like, Jeff, we're never going to show them singing a Ronette song. Like, it's never going to happen. And so I had to, like, it was like kind of a bit, but also kind of not. And then at one point, did they put No, they didn't put this in the episode. He was being Jeff Goldblum, and I went, Jeff's vision is based on movement. And Jeff Goldblum was like, what is that? What do you mean? What?
The movie
and,
you're in.
And Jada went, she's talking about a T-Rex, sweetheart.
Here's the thing is, Jada like quickly, I think, realized that she was just going to drop whatever preparation she had. And this is why she won the episode, is because she was just like, this is a mess and I'm going to go with it. Whereas, you know, me, I was like, I was really committed to this character.
Like,
that I
wrote jokes.
I was like,
I wrote jokes.
It's not even jokes. I mean, at this point, I wasn't even trying to be funny. I was like, I got to stay with this character. Like, I made up the rules of who I was. And I was like the improv actress who was like, not really. I was still yes anding with everything, but I was like, I gotta stick with this because
no, you had a fucking game to stick. You had, I saw that you had like a game to stick to, and it's like, if, oh yeah, yeah, it was that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is fun and challenging. And I'll speak from my point of view because I loved watching that episode. I loved watching you come out in a hijab. A wonderful representation for the Middle Eastern community. And then, you know, as a viewer, some of us were surprised when Jeff had an interesting way of trying to support your point of view when he was like, why are you wearing a hijab if the Muslim community can be homophobic? And I think you did a very elegant job of expressing yourself.
Yeah, and look, and I've talked about this in a few interviews, so this is definitely on the table to talk about, because I think everyone like really wants like my opinion on like what it is. And honestly, my opinion is that Jeff is a product of, you know, 50 years of Western media narratives around Middle Eastern people. And and that's, it's not, honestly, it wasn't surprising to me to hear that from him, because I think it's what the Western media narrative has said about, you know, people from the Middle East and specifically like the Muslim religion. But like, I think it was a teachable moment too, because I think, you know, you realize like, oh, this kind of negative homophobic element that Jeff may perceive in Islam is definitely exists in literally every religion, at least all of the major religions that are here in the United States. And there's nothing unique about it. And I think hopefully he kind of like opened his eyes that like there are queer people from the Middle East, queer people of who are practicing Muslim folks. And, you know, that what I was trying to represent was really about the importance of religious freedom in America, which is something this country is founded on. And the idea that we really can't, you know, discriminate against women who happen to be expressing their faith. Just like I wouldn't discriminate against Rachel for wearing a Star of David, just like I wouldn't discriminate against someone for wearing a cross. That's not a reason to make assumptions about people, make assumptions that they are either homophobic or, you know, these are all assumptions that people make. So hopefully he learned something. But, you know, I think by the end of that lip sync, he seemed to be moved. And I have yet to follow up with him. But Rachel, maybe
he was incredibly moved. So a couple things. So first of all, for those of you who can't see, I'm wearing a huge Star of David necklace. Like, I literally just...
like Flavor Flav. Same time. Oh, my God. Yes. David. Oh my God, Dave.
I really want to get that now, but it is also... But it is also a clock. Yes. So it was interesting. I didn't notice that Jeff was crying during the lip syncs. It was only until, so I did What's the Tea. I did What's the Tea, I want to say the day after or 2 days after I filmed Drag Race. And I got to go to Rue's house, which was really cool. It was really cool. And I was talking about Jeff, and Rue was like, he was crying. Jeff Goldblum was crying. And I was like, what? And it wasn't until I saw the footage that he was crying. So from my point of view, first of all, I was surprised they aired that question, because I could see that when he said that, I was like, this is, the internet is going to have
somehow
a field
the internet
day with
this. Is already hearing this.
I was like, the internet, Twitter's already blowing up from this. And I was like, they're not going to air this question.
Yeah. I don't think they were either, to be honest.
No,
I didn't think they were either.
I didn't think they were. And then, my second impulse after he said it, I was like, oh God, I got to do Jew damage control, because what's going to happen inevitably is he says this thing and then people are going to be like, you fucking Jews. This is what you fucking Jews think about all of us. So I was like, okay. Oh, God. Okay. Okay.
Oh, boy. How do
I, okay. So it was kind of a good Jew, bad Jew kind of moment.
It was. I had to play. So I was very, so as I think they aired like some of this, but I don't know if you remember, Jackie, I was like, well, Jeff, I'm sure that as Jews, you and I are aware of, you know, we come to this country from all different walks of life, mm-hmm. and the what we practice is not necessarily indicative of whatever home country might also practice that religion, whatever the politics or the policies. So I think we can all agree. Like, I took just a very like rabbinical diplomatic, because I was like, I am going to be called a lot of bad things on Twitter if I don't try to. I felt like I had to cover for all of the Jewish people to kind of gloss over that.
It's too much pressure on yourself.
Well, look, you guys feel this on the internet too, but if you know, it's the same thing with any, I guess, minority people. If one Jewish person fucks up, or if
well, and you were in the room with them, right? So it's like,
and
it's
like, well, exactly. Yeah. And I was in the room. So like, I had to provide a counterpoint. And then the whole time I was like, this won't air. I was like, I don't even know why I'm being so reasoned almost for like internal.
Well, I don't know
of the queen.
I don't know if you knew this, but like, I was so emotional afterwards, because right after that we went back to do Untucked, and before we actually were able to set up Untucked, I like had like a meltdown backstage. Like,
oh my God,
they didn't air that, huh?
No, I mean, I think because people didn't know what to do, and I honestly couldn't even express what I was feeling. I mean, but I was just so emotional because I felt
emotional fender bender. Where you're like, what
yeah,
do
it was
I
just.
Do?
I mean, it was a lot of things happening. One, it's like, you know, there's of course like the show, which is that you're in the bottom too, or you think you're in the bottom based on the critique, mm-hmm. so you're emotional about that. But then like, I felt like the weight of like every Middle Eastern person like on my back and being like, did I let them down? Because you say whatever you say on the runway, but you don't remember it.
Of course. Because
it came out of my brain and into my mouth. And so I didn't know what I'd said, if I'd like said the right thing or if I'd said the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was like really crying backstage. And like we had a couple Muslim women on our like talent handling team, mm-hmm. Who I'll never forget. They came and like held me because I was just so like, I'm even emotional thinking about it, but I was like so just overcome with feelings, and they just held me and they said like, you know, like you said the right things, like, you know, like, and they kind of really talked me down because I really thought like, what did I just do? Like, I didn't, you know, because one of the things that really was tough for me is that I've always seen drag as something that's more than just frivolous entertainment. Like, I've always mm-hmm. seen the power of drag, of being like, drag can be literally anything you want. You know, drag is a powerful tool that we can use to express all sorts of things, including mm-hmm. really complex issues. And probably in addition to the, you know, what Jeff was saying about the Muslim community, what also bothered me is that he had said, you know, like, he didn't understand why I would do something so serious in drag. You know, he kind of said, I forget what his exact words were, but I remember being like, did I make a mistake? Like, I thought this was what, like, this is what I believe in. And like, part of why I decided to go on national television to share my drag is because I wanted to talk about those kinds of things. So it was a really emotional moment for me too.
Yeah.
But you know, like, I think we use what we have. And so I like let that emotion fuel me in that last lip sync. Cause I was like, this is like, I was like flying because I had to like get all those feelings out there through that performance.
That was an emotional,
very difficult day. And to Rachel's point, what you guys don't realize is that runway day is so long.
Yeah.
It's so long because we have to, everything, because they have reset the cameras to film the judges' critiques. They reset the cameras to film us in Untucked. They reset, there's like so much things.
At like 9 p.m., 10 p.m.?
Yeah, we don't lip sync till 9 p.m. And then afterwards, you have to wait. You guys get to leave the judges, but then we have to wait for the girl who's eliminated to write her lipstick message exit the workroom. And while that's all happening, we have to sit in complete silence because they don't want us to talk about anything until we go back into the workroom and see the lipstick message. So there's like, by the end of that day, I don't even know how I felt, but the following week I was like, okay, I've done my time. I think I've said everything I wanted to say on TV. So that's why in the following week when it was the makeover challenge, I was like ready to go home. I was like, this has been my time. Thank you so much, Drag Race. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was gagged, you know, the following week. Then I was like, what am I still doing here?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Are you seeing some triggering ads on social media? Stuff about summer bodies, stuff about the diet cleanse, stuff about trimming down. Fuck that noise. That stuff is triggering for me, and I assume it's triggering for someone else listening. That's why I use BetterHelp. BetterHelp allows me to get in touch with a licensed professional therapist who can help me recharge, who can help me de-crap my brain. Because those negative images and slogans can really creep in and give me negative body talk. You know what I mean? Any form of negative self-talk that is traumatic for me. And thankfully, I'm using these tools and being honest about them and articulating them in a way that takes the power away from them. If you're thinking about therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. That's how I found my personal therapist. I found my sweet spot with BetterHelp. So go. Visit BetterHelp.com/dragher today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dragher. Go find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Hi, listeners. Here to tell you about a very important organization called Al Otro Lado, which helps to reunify families which have been ripped apart due to our country's cruel border policies. As you know, since 2018, many people have been suffering through these policies, which have taken children away from their parents. And Al Otro Lado is working to reunify families. They've already reunified over 100 refugee families, and they create legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the United States and Tijuana. We want you to get involved today. Help me support Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode below, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. That's alotrolado.org/volunteer.
But it's a very emotional thing to do. And Rachel, I think you... They didn't air everything you said, but I do remember your words kind of like helping me through that moment. And something you said too also made me like really proud, as you said, like when you saw me and Jada and Gigi, I think was there too, standing there, like the three of us. And I was, you know, wearing a hijab and Jada looked like an amazing Black Power superhero and Gigi, you know, in colonial garb, which, you know, it's part of America. You know, that's people are always like, what was she wearing? And I was like, I mean, the America is a very colonized place. It's a huge part of our history that every kid is taught, you know, the first 100 years of this country's history are very much dominated by just that story.
And we're told that they're brave superstars.
Sure, right? I mean, it's a part of our, I mean, there's, you know, George Washington is carved into a mountain that was stolen from Native Americans. Like, these are all things that have happened in our country.
And we talked about that episode. I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to say, when me and Rachel talked about that episode, we were like, isn't it a fucked up that the bottom two are the POC queens who are saying something about this fractured country?
Yeah, we did. I remember talking about that. And I think I'm now remembering, Jack, I think in the moment I was like, look at this. This is what I think what I said was something like, this is the beauty of America, that America is, I mean, the beauty slash complexity of America, that America is all of these different things. And I felt very, I mean, look, I think it was hard. That I'm trying to be diplomatic. Even though I'm not on Twitter anymore, I still fear causing Twitter fearers. But that also relates to my ADHD and something that happens with ADHD called rejection sensitivity dysphoria. But that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, what it seemed like, Jeff coming in, was like a straight white guy. RG's white, we'll talk about it later, but you know, a straight guy who'd never seen the show.
Right.
And who was just kind of then like pontificating. And I felt it as a host, and I imagine that must have been even 10 million times harder as a queen and a contestant on the show. And I felt also that whole day, in addition to being, in addition to, you know, kind of, and because also you don't, they rarely have like two guest judges on that show who don't know each other. I can actually kind of count on one hand the number of times.
Well, especially if you guys had to like work in such close proximity. It's not like you just showed up on the panel. You had to do like a scene together and like all of this stuff.
You're totally right. We were assigned questions. We had earpieces.
Yeah.
And so it was very intense because we'd never met before. So it was generally intense. And then, you know, I'm 2.5 months pregnant. I'm pumped up with hormones. The thing that I was thinking, and I think I said this at one point in the show without saying I was pregnant, I was looking at everyone being like, and I think I didn't know if I was having a boy or girl yet. So I was like, these were my kids, I'd be so proud. So that's what I was feeling all day. And I think at one point I managed to be like, I just want to say that I'm thinking of starting a family and I would be so proud if you were my children. Like, that's kind of what I felt, very weirdly maternal all day.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I felt that vibe too. And that's the thing is like, I mean, I understood like why I was in the bottom, because I think like I at some point did kind of like had to be a little rigid because I just didn't know like what to do, you know, and like I've never been in a scene, you know, like normally in a scene, right, when you're working with someone, they're like giving you back what you think you're putting out. And like Rachel and I were kind of doing that a little bit in some of the stuff that we were doing in the debate. But then Jeff was like, I just didn't know how to do a scene with Jeff.
It's not real improv. It's TV improv.
No, he was just being a wild card. Again, like he was being himself as a wild card. And I think it was a wild card in a situation where like it was actually, I think on any other day, if it had just been runway critiques, it would have been runway. But like he was a very important part of like actually feeding questions on this challenge. And I think it was because also Michelle wasn't there.
Yeah, so I keep wondering what that day would have been like if Michelle would have been there. Like, it's something that plays back in my mind.
There wouldn't have been two hosts. I think that part of the reason there were two of us is because Michelle wasn't there, and they needed someone to feed questions during the debate.
I wonder how the runway would have gone down. Like, there's so many things. Like, I'm just like, because I talked to Michelle about it when we did What You Pack In, and she was like, oh, I heard all about that day. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, she was like, oh, she's like, if I would have been there, you know, because I mean, she would have probably been not as polite as you, Rachel. And I'm assuming, knowing Michelle, and something that Michelle and I did talk about too off camera, she's like, she has a lot of, you know, she lives in LA and she has a lot of Persian friends. And so like, she was like, very much like, no, you know, like when she'd heard about, like, I think she would have shut him down, probably not as diplomatically as you did.
Well, look, I don't know the guy, and it's not my show. Like, I'm a guest there. I'm a guest there too. I want to, you know, come back. I'm a huge fan of the show. So it was like, but there was I would say like it probably was akin to the Joel McHale episode.
Oh my God.
Right? Like that's actually kind of how I think that's the best comparison to how I felt, which is I felt like Michelle felt during the Joel McHale episode. I just was trying to be diplomatic and be a good guest.
And like I said, I think at the end of the day, the tears in Jeff Goldblum's eyes, I think were real. I think they were genuine. And I think he learned something that day. Like, I think he did learn the power of drag. He did learn that we can express complex issues through this art form. That's my belief.
They really gave him an arc in that episode.
I mean, like, I haven't talked to him since, but my belief is that is like, was his outcome of that episode is, you know, it was like an adventure for Jeff Goldblum. Like, what is drag? Yeah. And I think he learned. I think by the end, he learned.
Yes. I also think it's giving, I mean, yes, it was a journey for him. He's also just like a kook. He's a known kook. Like, there's a part of him that's just kind of in the clouds in his own world, which is why he was talking a lot during the debate challenge. He was just there having a ball, didn't really know the show, and was like, okay, I'm just going to come on here and be Jeff Goldblum-y, which at that every other, you know, award show he does a bit at, every other talk show, that is his job, to come on and be Jeff Goldblum-y. It just happened to be a day where, like, the judges had an inordinate amount of like actual tasks.
Totally.
Oh, thank you for joining us for this like really fantastic episode. I am loving this conversation about season 12, and I don't want you to stop talking about season 12, Miss Jack A.
You know what? We can always put things in context of our own experiences.
Yes.
But let's talk about it. Let's talk about this new season.
The new crop of gals.
Jackie, when you watch this show now, how does it feel to watch the show having been on it now?
The first time I watched, the first thing that aired right after we filmed was UK season one, which was like, it was very difficult to watch because I was like, you kind of like relive all those tense moments. And it was before my season had aired. So I didn't know, I still didn't know what my season was going to be. Like, you don't know after you film, what did I say? Like, I don't remember anything. Like, what are they going to say in their interviews? Right. You have no idea kind of what the season's going to be. So I remember being very stressed. And now since, in the past 2 years, there have been 20 seasons of Drag Race.
Jesus Christ. So that feeling has gone away. Rona season, and now it's like there's 8 Rona seasons.
At first I was like, oh my gosh, like there's so many other seasons of Drag Race. But like I feel like lucky that season 12 kind of aired by itself with no other seasons of Drag Race on top of it.
Totally.
They hadn't done 20 other things yet. So now there's just so much.
Weren't they airing like Celebrity Drag Race after your eps?
They started doing that after All-Stars.
Oh, after All-Stars.
I'm trying to remember. But Jesus. It was like there was a lot happening.
A lot.
I just remember. So something else behind the scenes is we were hoping to do a real finale, like the girls, meaning the season 12 girls. We like really wanted to do one.
Yeah.
And so we kept like asking production like if they could like delay the finale to find a time when we could get COVID tested or whatever. And it was just such a – there are just so many unanswered questions and we didn't know what to do, which is why we went with the format we did, which I think ended up being a really cute finale and a reunion.
It was so fun.
But yeah, that was something we all wanted. But it didn't happen. But – we were like, can you just, air Celebrity? And then we had all these ideas, us girls, we get ideas.
And your season gets gossiped about as being famously re-edited for a lot of reasons.
Well, for one very specific reason.
Yes.
There's literally only one reason.
I'm being diplomatic.
Just one reason.
Is there anything you remember happening and you're like, I can't believe this didn't make it in the edit or got changed in the edit?
Something that, I'll say this is the person that I knew on set, is not the person they ended up to be in real life. And there are a few things that happened that if I had known then what I know now would have been like little red flags, and I won't disclose what those things are, but I will say, I wish I knew then what I knew now. But leaving the season, I felt so good about the whole cast. I felt like we felt like a family, and I think our season is kind of famous for being a cuddlier season. Like, we didn't have a lot of petty drama. There wasn't like people saying like, you smell, I hate your hair. Like, we didn't have that in our season, which
which would have been vicious if someone said,
I mean, you smell is like
that
so
was literally
mean.
That happened in previous seasons.
Oh yeah, like, 11. Like, I'm like, gagging.
Yeah, I guess. No, you're right.
I'm not
like
gagging.
It's definitely maybe part of, and also like in previous seasons, like girls would really come for each other in like personal ways.
Yeah.
And we never did that. And I don't think, though we had some disagreements, it never, I think, went below the belt, which I'm proud of. And so
I feel like your season had staggering talent, where there was like a couple weeks where it was like, nobody did bad, but someone's going home, you know?
I mean, and again, just to quickly, the only thing I'll say about the choices debate is considering what we all were up against, no one completely bombed that challenge, in my opinion. Granted, it's not Jackie's Drag Race, but like considering what was happening, I was like, we all kind of did it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's what I always think about season 12. And regardless of how they edited it, I think that came through. But I think there were definitely moments where, including the person who was edited out, was really part of that feeling and that sense of family. And, whether or not those feelings were genuine, I don't know. And I'll never know. And that's okay.
That must have been really, and I'm sure you talked to this, but that must have been, it's almost like you were all really sweet to each other as if you knew, there was going to be a huge problem with one of the contestants and that you suddenly be entering a pandemic. It's almost like it's if you, in retrospect, knew. And that must have been really hard because I believe the season premiered right around the it was like two weeks before lockdown. But all of that, and then also the finding out about the re-edit and everything. It just must have been really hard for all of you, I imagine.
We just were just in such a place of uncertainty, and I say this as the oldest contestant on my season, which isn't, I mean, I was 34 when we filmed, you know, but like Gigi was 21, and like this is like the first time certainly any of us had this kind of national exposure, but also like we've never been able to, you know, kind of think of our careers in this way. And so it was really scary because drag is a live entertainment venue. You know, it's something that like you have to not have to, but I think we, you know, the way you work after Drag Race is you tour, and we weren't able to tour for a year. And so it was really scary. But, you know, I think we all like we really like kind of hunkered down and like talk to each other and help each other through it. And, you know, certainly as we were getting ready for the reunion, like it was our idea, like the cast's idea to do the slumber party. So that was like something that we came up with and things that like the girls agreed to. And like we all just kind of leaned in on each other because though every season of Drag Race, you kind of find sisters because you've all been through kind of something similar. We had something very unique. And, you know, even season 13 and 14, they knew they were filming during a pandemic. The pandemic had already happened. For us, it was like sprung upon us and we had to cancel literally all of our gigs, all of our plans, all of our tours, Drag Con, like all of those things. I still haven't done a Drag Con, 2 years later. Right. And so it was something that really threw us for a loop. But I'm proud of, you know, the 12 of us and how we've been able to still make careers and, you know, still do the thing.
You're still doing the thing. And it's interesting. It's an interesting challenge for all the girls to be like, stay out there, stay relevant, stay performing. And if you follow Jackie, you know, she's doing the damn thing.
We all are, you know, we're doing our best. And I'm so proud of my cast, and I will always love the 12.
Are you coming to DragCon this year?
Oh yeah, baby.
Okay, good. Because
is DragCon? Wait, is DragCon happening?
As of now, it's still happening in May. It's happening in May, so this will be the first DragCon, and there'll be 20 new seasons that have yet to be at a DragCon. So it's gonna be like,
oh my god, it's gonna be so many new queens.
It's gonna be wild.
Rachel, we'll
sneak you in the back. We'll bring you and the baby, and you guys will just it'll be.
I kind of want to bring her to the you know the it's like drag queen storytelling time.
Oh there's yeah, a whole, I love
there's
doing
a,
that.
There's
yeah.
a whole kids section of DragCon. Mm-hmm. We'll see where if she's vaccinated for Omicron. I get her. She already likes wearing makeup, so I could.
That's
I could,
fun.
Yeah, she likes. I have a little makeup vanity in the bedroom, and she's. She's obsessed when she sees me doing makeup. She likes to sit on there. She goes, makeup. And she likes to pretend to do makeup. So I got her like a little toddler washable makeup kit. And it's a mess. She takes the lipstick and she puts it on her cheeks. But you know what? That, in a way, is very drag.
And you read her the way Michelle would.
I go, oh, listen, you fat piece of shit.
No. Wait, I have an actual question, though, because motherhood is something that I feel like, like you said, was something you felt inside of you. And now that you've experienced it, like, are we going to see something new from your brain that kind of expresses how you feel about it?
Oh.
And I mean like, artistically, I mean that vaguely. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, is there a new crazy ex-girlfriend where it's like, you know, crazy mom? But, like, what is Rachel as a mom in performance?
Oh, God, thank you for this question. Mm-hmm. No one's actually really asked me this yet. Well, I have a new, you know, I think I'm playing a little bit of catch up. So I have a live show I've been working on when there's not an Omicron variant that I hope to eventually film as a special, which is about my experiences it kind of around 2020. So it's much more about giving birth, having a newborn during the pandemic, and then, you know, one of my good friends died of COVID a week after I gave birth to my daughter. So it's kind of about that. And then it's interesting. All of the projects I have are ideas that kind of came up when I had a newborn. So there's no idea yet about motherhood per se. I mean, there's a song in the live show that's about what it feels like to have a newborn. I think what's, so for me, I think that it's constantly changing. I think that's the thing is the first 2 years of a kid's life are so dynamic, and they're like 15 different people.
Right.
And you come into, at least I feel like I've come into motherhood. Having a newborn and being terrified of them suffocating is, I mean, you're always terrified of them suffocating, but like is different than having a toddler who's learning to talk.
Right.
And take in
communicate
the world
with you.
And communicate. And I mean, she's right now going through a huge sleep regression. And so she woke up at 2 a.m. last night screaming. And it's like, okay, how do you deal with that, where it's someone who can talk and is going like, mama, mama, up there, door, door. You know, that's a different skill. So I think that I'm still almost like processing how motherhood feels, what it means to be a mother, and how to put that into my art. And I think that I had so much, especially something like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, that was, you know, 26 years of thinking about the stories I tell myself and obsession with love, right? That was such a like built up, learned, like a culmination of all this learned experience. And with kind of like a similar treatise on motherhood, I think it's going to take me a couple more years to really fully let it sink into my bones, especially because it's been in a pandemic.
Right.
There's a part of it that doesn't feel real. It feels very real, but I haven't brought her. She's never been in a grocery store.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't brought her. We've been to the zoo like once, and frankly, it was a little too crowded for my comfort.
Yeah.
There's a part that feels like that's a part of my life which is separate from the other parts of my life, which has been me for the past 34 years. So I think as we come out of the pandemic and I learn how to, and it really sinks in my bones, like being a mother, and I like let it, and it becomes more, it seeps into my identity more. I'll have more of a point of view of what to say, because, you know, when she was a newborn, I was like, oh, is there a thing to do about having a newborn? And then now they're definitely like, oh, is there a thing to write about having a toddler? But as I said, the stages are so transient that by the time you make the thing, I think a lot of people, even who have kids, don't remember. It's a very specific relatability. All of this stuff, you learn so many facts about having a kid that then aren't relevant.
Right.
Three fucking months, like how, you know, sleep training, what kind of passy, what do you put in the crib? It's all of these like almost like technical specifics that I don't think are necessarily sustained.
Well, you have to like delete them out of your brain, right?
To get you have to delete, or you're making, okay, I'm going to make a show that's a snapshot of having a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I'm trying to figure out a little bit what is something that I can say about motherhood that hasn't been said, because I came into motherhood with, and I felt this about pregnancy too. I'd heard so many bits and jokes, and I mean, I've seen so many movies about pregnancy and having a newborn. I literally don't yet know what my hot take is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I can say that other people haven't said about it yet.
Right.
So I think that's part of my debate.
Gag.
Ooh, I mean, I would obviously counter you and say that you have such a rich musical expression, and like, you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, like you said, the part of me that what made that show great, it's not that the experiences were unique. Some of them were, maybe hadn't been shown on TV, but I think a lot of it was just the way you told these stories. I think so that was something
that only
you have, right? It's something you're like,
Patti LuPone
musical.
Said you're the only person who knows how to do musicals on TV.
Yeah, it was.
That is in my emotional ego spank bank, and I bring it out whenever I have a bad day. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, I don't know. I, I,
Well, and luckily there's time, right?
Yeah. Like, right. There's a lot of time. I do have a new song in this live show about.
This isn't the one I read, is
about,
it?
No.
God,
this is another
that
show.
That one's incredible too.
Oh, thank you. Incredible. I have another live show that may or may not be going up, but we'll see. But no, this is, I have a song that's like a lullaby in my new live show about how it feels to specifically have a newborn that goes into, I think, the general feeling of being a mother, specifically a new mother. So and I also think because I'm not doing like, if I were still doing more like one-off YouTube music videos, I actually might be thinking of it like, okay, how do I turn my current experience into something? But because most stuff I'm focusing on right now is much more like long form, like TV series, a special, a play. Mm-hmm. There's less like popping into where am I at in my life currently. But honestly, Jackie, you're getting me thinking.
Yum, 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 yum. I like to eat food, but you know, it's hard. Let's be real. Food is confusing and it happens 3 times a day. You want me to cook 3? I'm offended. I'm aghast. I'm agog. The gall, the gumption, the nerve, the audacity, and the cheek, all of it. I don't like it. But now I'm calm because I use Factor Meals. Factor Meals are available in just 2 minutes. They come right to my door and they have really popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie. You can get any kind of delicious meal delivered to your door. I love them. I've been using them for over a year, way before I started talking about them on the podcast. They help me feel full, satiated. There's no mess. It comes never frozen. It's always fresh. It's my favorite meal solution. I've said it a million times. I come home after a night of hanging or dancing and I eat a Factor meal. Like, to me, that's the ultimate endorsement. These meals are so yummy that I'm able to kick a craving for a much naughtier meal and come home and eat something I know will be good for my body. So head to factormeals.com/dragher50 and use code dragher50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus 20% off your next month. That's a lot of money. That's code DRAGHER50 at factormeals.com. Go get into it. Factormeals.com/DRAGHER50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Gaggy. Okay.
Sorry, we should talk about this episode.
I guess we should. I think this might be a separate pod, but like, I love you both. So like, I love hearing this, but I guess I think our listeners will kill us.
You can release
us.
A two-part.
I think it's going to be a two-part, but
yeah,
I think so. This is just too good. But should we talk about this app?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
These girls deserve it.
These girls deserve it.
Oh, we didn't even get to talk about Che Diaz on And Just Like That.
God. Oh, wait, that's a whole other podcast, but yes.
Oh my God, I was so excited to bring up Che to both of you.
Well, as the only non-binary person being non-binary and talking about being non-binary, I feel represented.
I understand that non-binary people are offended by Che Diaz, as they should be, but I am offended as a comedian.
Yes, you should be.
But right, like, nothing they've given Sarah has been funny. I think maybe like someone that's like a very quirky comedian could have sold some of it. Like, you know those comedians just that anything they say is funny because they kind of talk funny or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're not writing them jokes. They're not writing Sarah any jokes. There's no jokes. Yeah. Where are the jokes?
No, but not only that, the thing of like, give me an hour and I'll have a tight 10 about this moment. Like, if you knew a comedian who fucking said that, you'd be like, you're a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Right, and
it's dark.
And the thing is, I love comedians that are not straight white men, but I don't know if I love comedians that are not straight white men that sound like straight white men.
That is, I had a similar thing where they're like, they're proving Miranda's queerness by giving us a very male amorous storyline for her. You know what I mean?
I mean, Che Diaz, regardless of gender identity, is a douche. Right?
Yes. So,
like, I think like that's like known on the internet that Che is a not good person. And, you know, mechanically, Che is great at fingering. Great. I feel really bad if that is the reason that Miranda is staying with them. Because.
Oh, well, that fingering scene was so unfair because, like, so Che is good at fingering. First of all, like, fingerings... Fucking, I mean, I've never fingered someone. I've only been fingered. Well, I fingered myself. And fingering
because
is like
you have,
hard.
You have a knowledge of it. So
Every clit is different. Every clit is different. So like the idea in that scene where like Che's fingering her and there's no feedback. Che's just really good at fingering. And then she's like, Steve, finger me. And he's like, And then she doesn't give him any... She doesn't give him any feedback.
Yeah, justice
she doesn't
for
go like,
Steve.
No, no, no.
Justice for Steve.
Poor Steve.
It's so fucking unfair. And this and I'm working on something about like this narrative that we have that in order for someone to please you, they just have to know. Mm-hmm. And there should be no direction or communication. And if they don't get it from the first moment, they're bad at sex and they're a fucking moron. Is such a damaging narrative about love and sex. Mm-hmm. And it is the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Bury that. And I think the Che Diaz of it all is that, one, they're a bad comedian. Two, they are a very pompous person, right?
Yes.
And three, like, they have some kind of sexual prowess that they think makes them better than other people, uh-huh. Which I guess is the same thing as being pompous. But they're pompous both about their comedy and their sexual prowess, which is, like, literal douche behavior.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very unlikable. Comedy concert. I don't get it. Oh. And why would she not tell Steve immediately? Talk to your partner. Steve cheated on you once.
Here's the thing. Okay, to back that part up, I do think if someone is having a queer reckoning with themselves, it can be very difficult to share with someone. That part, I mean, you and I have been gay people for a long time, but mm-hmm. maybe for those of us, you know, there's a big phenomenon of late in life lesbians, women mm-hmm. who've repressed maybe same sex attraction or non-binary sex attraction. And so I can see why that'd be hard to verbalize. I'm anticipating that Miranda will get the guts to tell Steve. I just hope that Steve's like, fuck you. After the bullshit with the bridge, fuck you.
Yes.
I really hope that Steve is honest and is just like, this is not fair.
Yes.
You need to fix yourself. And if you would like me to ever be in your life, we will have to have a different conversation. Right? It's like, not after Miranda made such a big deal with the bridge. And again, that was 15 years earlier in their relationship, but still, come on.
No, but fuck Steve, I think, cheated on her once. Miranda is now carrying an ongoing affair with someone.
It is a physical and emotional
and like,
affair.
Yes.
And I read an article where they were saying, oh, on set, there were Team Steve and Team Miranda buttons. And having done a show where there were like, oh, who are you? Who do you want Rebecca to end up with or whatever?
Oh, did people have like team things on the show? Like Josh?
We didn't do that, but we were talking about it amongst like the cast and crew and stuff. But that's different. Like Team Miranda implies that Steve is a selfish, mean person. Mm-hmm. If anything, it should be like Team Che, Team Steve buttons. But the point is like it being framed on the show as like, well, either this is Miranda going after what she wants. No, she's cheating on someone. She's betraying someone and she's being an uncommunicative partner. And literally 15 years ago when the genders were switched, it was fucked up.
Right. I do think it's fucked up. I do think also blaming Steve for his disability is really fucked up. Like,
yes.
Like people are like, oh, I can't believe he lost his hearing. It's like people lose their hearing at any age. So I think that's fine as a storyline. But
they're also turning him into a salt pillar of a man. Like he is returning. He's so old. They're making him so old. It's like he's returning to the earth. Like he's like a shadow of a man.
But also she keeps getting so mad at him. And it's like it's not his fault he can't hear. Like it's.
Losing your hearing also doesn't mean you can't fuck anymore.
Yes.
Like, sure. if I were part of the deaf and hard of hearing community, I'd be like, are you saying we're all fucking bad at sex? Also, even if he could hear, she's not fucking telling him anything. It's not like he was fingering her and she's like, okay, wait, like a little, can you be a little wetter on my clit? And he was like, what? She didn't even fucking say anything.
The only thing that'll make this pay off is if somehow this season of television, if they reveal that End Just Like That is actually the fourth Matrix movie and we've been seeing a simulation of real life, that would be the only thing that would make sense.
I think Charlotte's arc is making sense to me. I'm believing everything that I believe everything yes. she's going through. I believe
I hate it.
I hate it or not, she's reacting exactly how Charlotte would 15 years later.
I used to like Charlotte.
Yeah.
And now I'm like,
I don't dislike Charlotte. I think is she unfair sometimes to people? Yes, but I think I believe it and it comes from a real place. I just don't understand, like, a few, like, logistical things. Like, if Miranda knows her husband can't hear, why wouldn't she text him where she's standing in the meat stand or whatever? It's, like, simple things that I'm like, some of this stuff, like, you're losing me because we're now, like, going beyond the realm of reality into some...
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm still watching.
Still watching.
I'm watching every week.
It's amazing.
My daughter's obsessed with, there's this show on HBO that was literally filmed in 2000 called Goodnight Moon and Other Sleepy Time Tales, which is just, it's like the one TV program she's ever seen. It's just a bunch of kids and celebrities reading different story time books. And so we were on so she was like, Goodnight Moon. I was like, okay, we can watch. It's just like a little TV. And then I realized there was a new episode of Just Like That. And I was like, okay, we're going to watch a little bit of And Just Like That. And I made my toddler watch some of And Just Like That. And I was like, Miranda's being very selfish. And she was like, Moon? And I was like, just a second. We have to see what happens in this. God. And she just kept going, Moon? Moon? I was like, hold on.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. It's also, And Just Like That really, I don't think, works unless you have an emotional attachment to these women, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But it's one of those shows where it's like, oh, this really, like, if I had never seen Sex and the City and I started watching this show, I'd be like, what is this? These people are horrible.
I love it. Okay, I have to let y'all go. I feel cruel.
Listen, this is
delightful. This has been
perfect.
Your
poor editor has 2 hours to work through.
I am so sorry. And it'll be interesting. This is going to be two episodes for sure.
I think you should split.
It's definitely going to be bonus ep and a real ep. We love y'all for listening. Love you, Jackie. Love you, Rage.
Mwah.
Bye.
That's it for this week, fam. I hope you enjoyed the bonus app. If you like Drag Her, listen to Drag Her podcast wherever you get your fine pods and give us a 5-star review. And say some stuff. Don't just give us 5 stars. Write some stuff down. Come on. Write me a poem, bitch. Thanks for listening. Till next time. Ta-ta.
That was a HeadGum Original.